keep children and families safe. Medication trackers, lock bags, lock caps, medication destruction packets, and more. Learn how to be educated, involved, and active participants in the fight against drug and alcohol use. More information at cccsos.org or 845-794-8080. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
Hi, my name is Caitlin Mihalik, and I teach high school biology in Washington, D.C. Part of the curriculum is to do this task on gene editing, and so I found this recent article at the time that Rob Stein wrote about sickle cell and gene editing, specifically using CRISPR, to help this woman, Victoria Gray. Most of my students are African American, so I thought it was very relevant because most of my students know of sickle cell anemia. They might know of someone who's a carrier, might know someone who has it, so it was a pretty personal and meaningful story to a lot of my students, and it helped pique their interest for the task on looking at gene editing and CRISPR. Representation in journalism matters to the students in my classroom and so many others. Your support ensures we hear from a variety of voices. Please give to the station today.
Support Radio Catskills Spring Fun Drive at WJFFradio.org.
It's WJFFradio.org. Let me just check that website. Hey, I'm Jason Dole, by the way. How are you doing? Been here with you through the news. We have a $1,000 goal during the news here. Before Mr. Kusar Grace comes in to do the Music Emporium tonight, we need to finish raising his $1,000. We're just $180 away. Please. Whatever you can give towards that, do give now, especially while there's still some folks in the building. You might be able to pick up the phone before I really get into the local edition coming up. Please call 845-482-4141. That's 845-482-4141 to make your donation over the phone. You can always go to WJFFradio.org. That's our website for Radio Catskill, WJFFradio.org. You see the picture of the dandelion. It says Spring Fun Drive. Donate now. Click on that. And it will show you that we're about 58% of the goal towards our drive. We're trying to get to 60% before we get to 7 o'clock tonight. We still have more news to come. We have the local news with the local edition and the daily before we get into our phenomenal Tuesday night music lineup with 2 hours of the Music Emporium. $180 left towards this $1,000. Help us out. 845-482-4141. The goal online says 58%, but we've gotten a lot of donations since then that have not been entered online because they all came in over the phone. We haven't had an online donation since the 2 o'clock hour today. So it's been a number of hours since somebody's donated online, and you feel free to donate at WJFFradio.org, but you can also do it over the phone. So I know that we're at least at 59%. We're closing in on 60% because earlier today in that 2 o'clock hour, I calculated, I said, you know, if we just raise $1,000 more, we'll be at 60%. And that's where I want to be by the time we get to the Music Emporium tonight. It's where we need to be. These fund drives only work if we keep the momentum going. And the momentum translates to lots of donations from lots of people spread throughout the fund drive. And we've gotten to this point now where we only have about, 4 or 5 days left. It ends Saturday midday. Whether we've raised all the funds we need to raise or not, we'll be ending the on-air portion of the drive. I think we can end this drive earlier. I think it doesn't even need to go until noon on Saturday. I think we could end this Friday night, Friday afternoon, maybe Friday morning, maybe Thursday night. 845-482-4141. I think that because we've seen an amazing amount of support. 203 donations have come in from listeners like you so far during this fund drive. And we just need, you know, some more. We just need a few more. It's easy for me to say, but it comes down to people that have something to donate, making the decision, say, oh, you know what? This time it's me. You are the one we're waiting to hear from. You're the one we've been waiting on. Wake up to realize that you are what public radio is all about. Not everybody, and Kit was saying this in the last hour, not everybody has something to give. Not everybody's in a financial position where they can support nonprofit educational public radio in their community. And that's okay. But that's all the more reason for you to donate if you do have something to give, because you can keep this going for all of us. Support the local news that we produce here. A lot of people work on this local news, both in-house here in this building. Our editorial staff, myself, Tim Bruno, Patricio Rubio, the interns that we work with here in-house, our supporting staff here, but then also all of our news partners that we check in. And we're about to check in with one of our news partners coming up in the local edition tonight. People that are doing good work across New York State, across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And we bring that news to you, local news, regional news, and of course the national and international news that we get. All of that is possible only because listeners like you make a donation during these fund drives. Again, $180 left towards this $1,000 that we need to raise during the news. As we get into the local news portion of the evening, realize we still need to hear from you. Make your donation now at WJFFradio.org or give us a call, 845-482-4141. And we've got volunteer Ralph here going to be jumping in. Ralph, we got some people to thank. Are they good with being thanked on air?
Yeah, we got Larry Seltzer.
Hey, thank you, Larry.
Yeah, and so he just donated $100 and he grabbed the kids bop tickets.
That's great. That's a family show, and that's a 4-pack of tickets. So those tickets are gone. Again, for a donation of $100 or more, there are still some tickets left that you could pick up. 845-482-4141. So Ralph, you know that is the phone ringing?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, here, let's just chat for a minute. So,
sure, absolutely.
Now, thanks to Larry's donation there, you know, that, like, we've been trying to raise $1,000 since just before 4 o'clock. We said we've got until 7 o'clock to do it during the news. This is a goal to raise $1,000 during the news that'll get us to 60% of our overall goal. So now we're just $80 away. We're just $80 away.
I tell you. I know it's out there. I know it's, you know, the thing is that people buy coffee every day, you know, spending a few dollars on coffee and lunch and stuff like that. So, you know, $80 and we'll reach our goal.
Yeah. If that is a steep ask, then, and that's not something you can give right now, then we're not talking to you. You don't need to worry about giving that. You can give what you can. But if that is something you could afford to give, then you are the one we're talking to because we need to hear from you now.
Absolutely.
845-482-4141. Ralph, you've been in the office right along this afternoon. It's been a busy afternoon.
Absolutely. The phones have been ringing off the hook. You know, this is what we need. You know, we're a public radio. We don't make any money here. It's non-commercial. And, you know, we have a great staff here. So we need to keep this thing going. So please, you know, call, make your donations so we can bring these great programs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It doesn't happen without listeners like you. None of what we do on air that I was talking about, none of it's possible without listeners like you. So please pick up the phone and give us a call. Ralph, you want to let them know how to do that? 845.
Yeah.
Yeah. 845-482-4141. They can also go. Nobody's been going online. They just want to talk to you on the phone. That's what's been happening.
You know, it's like I says, you can go to WJFF.org and, you know, make your pledge. And I know you're going to be here with KG, right, on the Music Emporium.
Yeah, we've got Kusar coming in less than an hour now. We really need to finish raising this $1,000. Mm-hmm. We're just $80 away. So let's get in the local edition, and maybe somebody will call.
Absolutely.
845-482-4141. Call now, give now at 845-482-4141. Go to WJFFradio.org.
The Upper Delaware Council is seeking volunteers for the 4th Annual Upper Delaware Litter Sweep, April 14th through the 30th. They need individuals, students, groups, and businesses to help spring clean landscapes in 15 New York and Pennsylvania townships bordering the Upper Delaware Scenic and Recreational River. Council litter leaders will provide volunteers with a location, supplies, and volunteer t-shirts. More information at 845-252-3022 or upperdelawarecouncil.org. Paid for by the Upper Delaware Council.
Live from Radio Catskill Studios and offices right here in Liberty, New York. This is a local edition. I'm your host, Jason Dole. Had a great afternoon. Here is our fun drive. I'll try not to talk about it too much now that we're actually starting the news, but oh my goodness, we're so close to making that $1,000 goal. Give us a call, 845-482-4141. We're just $80 away. Back to the news, local edition. Over a million people in Pennsylvania will not be able to vote in the Democratic or Republican primaries that are coming up next Tuesday, April 23rd, in Pennsylvania. It's because they aren't either Democrats or Republicans. In Pennsylvania has what they call closed primaries. You got to be a member of one of those parties. Increasingly across America, that's not how states are doing it. States let independent voters vote as well. Non-party affiliated voters vote as well. Kate Wongpu of Spotlight PA has looked into this and has an article about it. And we go through all the details about that. I spoke to her earlier today. That'll be coming up later in the program. But first up, we have an update on the budget. And I can give you an update so far that I could just look at the calendar and see that it's April 16th. And we're talking about New York's budget here. The New York State budget is due April 1st. That was a couple weeks ago. We've now passed that halfway mark of April. So it's a couple weeks overdue. We do have an update because just yesterday, Governor Kathy Hochul announced that there's a conceptual deal on the state budget. But just a day after she announced that, the assembly speaker says that announcement was premature. And he says many lawmakers have yet to be briefed on all the details, and nothing is set in stone. Karen DeWitt has more for us right now.
Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie says it's true that Hochul and Democratic lawmakers are generally on the same page on key issues, including easing the affordable housing crisis, a study to make future changes to the school aid formula, and increasing penalties for retail theft. But he says it's too soon to say there's an actual budget deal.
The pencils weren't fully down, but I would say conceptually, we probably were close on a lot of things.
Hastie has used the analogy of the governor and legislature being in the same state, then the same town, to describe how close they are to agreement. Now he says it's inched a bit closer, but he says he's still hearing back from his Democratic majority members in private meetings, and many have questions about the proposed spending plan.
I think we were in the same zip code. But I always have to brief members before I can ever say a deal is a deal.
Hastie says the biggest questions his members have concern the tentative housing deal. Hochul on Monday night announced that a new tax break will be created for developers who include affordable housing in their projects, known as 485X. It would replace the former tax break 421A that expired 2 years ago.
These new measures represent the most comprehensive new housing policy our state has seen in three generations.
The housing package also includes more rights for tenants, and the speaker confirmed that the measure, known as the Good Cause Evictions Act, would be mandatory in New York City, but localities outside of the city could choose whether to opt in. The housing package has been criticized by both progressive groups and Republicans, who are in the minority in the state legislature. Hastie says perhaps it's a good sign that the deal pleases no one.
Probably everyone who had an interest in this was probably going to not walk away happy. And I think we've accomplished that mission. I don't think anybody's happy. And oftentimes when people in polar opposites, it's difficult to make two sides happy at the same time.
The budget was due on April 1st, and lawmakers have had to pass five budget extenders as the weeks have gone on. The current one runs out on Thursday. The speaker could not say whether a sixth extender will be necessary or if the budget will be finished by then. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network.
Okay, and next up on the local edition, Spotlight PA, the nonpartisan statewide member-funded newsroom based in Harrisburg, has the mission of holding the powerful in Pennsylvania to account through independent investigative and public service journalism. And we at Radio Catskill partner with Spotlight PA to regularly bring you that in-depth journalism. And the recent article, they report that more than 1.3 million people in Pennsylvania can't vote in the Democratic or Republican primaries that are coming up next week, April 23rd. But there's actually a campaign to change that, though it's moving slowly. Kate Wongpu of Spotlight PA is with us now to tell us more. Kate, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So I guess could you just tell us a little bit more about like the system and reiterate for people about who can vote in this primary before we talk about like the effort to change it?
Yes, for sure. So Pennsylvania is one of about 10 states that has a closed primary system. So that means only people who are registered to a party can participate in that party's primary election. So that means if you're registered to a third party, or if you registered as an independent, meaning you don't identify with any major party, you're functionally not able to vote in the primary for candidates. So this includes about, it covers about 1.3 million people in Pennsylvania right now. That number is growing. A lot of people are registering independent more and more. But oftentimes primaries are the elections where candidates are decided, right? Like there are a lot of districts where there's a huge majority of Republicans or Democrats, so the general election really matters less and less than the primary.
Right. So, but there in Pennsylvania, there's folks that want to change this. So how are they approaching this effort? How long have people been working on this?
Yes. So this goes back at least two decades from by our count. That's the earliest bill text I can find. It's from about 1993, I believe. But essentially, there are variations on this, but most of the bills nowadays want to allow independent voters to participate in primaries, so not third-party voters, but people who aren't registered to any party. And they would be allowed to pick either the Democrat or Republican primary to participate in.
Wow. And you make note of that this effort's moving slowly. And why do you describe it that way?
Yeah, well, I think there's been times in the recent past where, you know, like the bill has passed the state Senate or it's passed the chamber, the state government committee of the House. But it's never managed to sort of get both chambers in recent history or ever really. That's why there's been a lot of longstanding efforts and a lot of lawmakers who supported this starting their careers in the legislature and have been here, you know, like 10, 15 years later, and they're still advocating for it. Notably, like Senator Dan Laughlin and Senator Lisa Boscola, I believe they both said that they started their careers supporting this bill, and they've brought it up every year since, and it's still yet to pass.
Is an open primary in any way more fundamentally democratic than a closed primary? Is anybody making that case? Or is it really that's what they're saying?
Yeah, that's sort of the argument that good government advocates for this change are making, right? Where by including independents, you're sort of tampering down on the far right or far left parts of this party. Those independents will sort of bring that centrist voice and result in fewer extreme candidates being elected through primaries. Because primaries, you're appealing to the base of a party, right? You're not being weighed down to the center by opposite members of you know, the Republicans, the Democrats. And similarly, they're also arguing that, you know, if you're registered independent, then functionally you're paying for elections that you're not allowed to participate in. And that is, in their view, a form of disenfranchisement.
Right. I guess, you know, a lot of people might think, well, if it's an open primary, you know, then you might get one party trying to mess with the other. And then you're thinking of very partisan actors in a model like that. And in that scenario, that hypothetical, you're basically passing right over the role of independence in the process.
Yeah, there's certainly people who are against open primaries are concerned about crossover voting that you were talking about, you know, people who are participating in primaries that maybe they don't actually believe in, but they want to, you know, skew or have a political agenda when voting in another party's primary. Some other arguments I've heard are just the logistics of this, right, where county election directors are going to have to print a lot more different kinds of ballots to allow for all these different kinds of voters to participate in different kinds of primaries, which would just be would create opportunities for more mistakes to happen, right? Just because there's a lot more to do. Similarly, I think I've also heard county election directors say that, you know, you are able to change your registration up to 2 weeks before the election, I believe. So you could, if you wanted to, change your registration, vote, and then change back, right? So it is just a logistical and procedural process. I think the people who are advocating for this change, it's more a matter of principle for one, but it's also, it's just easier for another.
Do you, have you, as you look into this article, I mean, you mentioned the fact that there's essentially 10 states that have closed primaries. I didn't realize it was that small a number. Are you looking at how this is trending across the country, and is it trending in one direction or the other?
Yeah, by and large, most states have definitely more open primaries than we have. Some states have partially closed primaries. Some states have partially open primaries. So it's definitely a spectrum. It's just dependent on how many, like some states allow third parties, some states only allow independents, et cetera. So Pennsylvania is definitely on the more restricted end. We're the most restrictive end, with about, you know, a dozen or so other states. But I think by and large, a lot of states have already shifted this system to allow at least independents, sometimes third parties, to participate in their primary as well.
Yeah, and while we're talking here, I'm actually like browsing a Ballotpedia page article about this, and basically I'm surprised now to see also that there's a whole spectrum of openness or closedness, you know, mm-hmm. like whether it's one party or both parties, for instance. So this is very interesting, and you might not have an answer for this, but as you look into the story and you're talking to some of those, like, you know, pro-democracy advocates or good government advocates that want to see this change, does this issue, this open primary issue, overlap with any other notable movements for good government or pro-democracy? For example, people that are advocating for ranked choice voting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this issue, so far as I know, that like the Ballot PA, one of the biggest advocacy groups that are, you know, lobbying for this issue, are linked with Committee of 70, who I know like support a host of election administration reform. I don't believe that ranked choice voting was one of the ones that they're like pushing really hard at the current moment. A lot of their advocacy is based on sort of like pre-canvassing, changing early registration dates for voting, for voter registration, early voting in person dates, sort of things like that. So there's some crossover, but by and large, Ballot PA, I think, just focuses on this issue.
And finally, are advocates looking for any direct action from the electorate in Pennsylvania on this issue?
I mean, right now the bill is sort of stuck, right? Like the it has passed the state government committee in the House. The House leadership, Democratic leadership, hasn't said whether or not they would call the bill up. In the Senate, it's interesting because, you know, like 5 years ago, the bill passed, I believe, like 44-6 or something like that, with a pretty big majority. But at that time, the Senate president was the one pushing the bill forth. So there was support in leadership. This time around, we're not quite sure where Senate leadership stands on this. I think there's a varied, like, a spectrum of interest in the in Senate Republicans, but I don't know if there's momentum to put it forward. And similarly, the Senate State Government Committee chair has said that he's pretty against this bill. So it's unsure as to whether or not it'll actually get passed this session.
Right. And now, is there anything else on the story that you want to get to that we didn't mention?
No, I mean, I think that is the gist of it for sure.
Right. So, I mean, while we have you, though, I mean, your beat is, you know, the governor, the legislature there in the Commonwealth. Could you just give us anything that you're looking at now that you might be working on for next story, or what's happening in Harrisburg that might be of interest to our listeners that you could just chat about for a moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now a lot of people are gearing up for the primary. There are three row offices that are up for election. So the attorney general, the auditor general, and the state treasurer. I'm currently sifting through some campaign finance documents, and we're going to be doing a write-up on that. Other than that, as far as the state legislature itself, what I've been keeping an eye on has been a lot of energy policy-related stuff. A host of bills were introduced today by the Blue-Green Caucus, which is a sort of like environmental labor union, where they proposed a lot of energy and utility bills. Similarly, the governor had his own energy proposal, a lot of activity with the hydrogen hub. So that's sort of what I'm looking at.
Okay, great. Well, and as you continue to work on that, we'd love to talk to you to get further insight into what's happening in Pennsylvania governance. But for now, Kate, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.
Okay, and next up on the local edition. Okay. That was the story. That was Kate Wongpoo from Spotlight PA, and her article is currently up at Radio Catskills website, wjffradio.org, wjffradio.org. And the article, again, just about that process, the slow process, and the unlikely bill that may pass about getting independents to participate in the primary process. Up now, just check out wjffradio.org, where, not coincidentally, that's where you can also make a donation right now to Radio Catskills Fund Drive. That's wjffradio.org. And finally, before we go, and oh, also you can call 845-482-4141. That's 845-482-4141.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
And finally, on The Local Edition tonight, sneak preview of a full interview that we're going to hear tomorrow on Radio Catskill. But this is about the April 27th Roebling Aqueduct Anniversary Event. And Sullivan County historian John Conway talked to Patricio Raballo about the event earlier. Here's an excerpt.
I think the walking tour is going to be incredibly informative, and that'll be conducted by Professor Paul King. I've spoken to Professor King a number of times, just an incredibly articulate and knowledgeable source for information about Roebling and about wire rope, and I'm really looking forward to that myself, a walking tour of the aqueduct and how it was converted after the canal closed into a vehicular bridge and still serves that purpose today. Obviously, many thanks due to the National Park Service, who a number of years ago purchased the bridge and restored it so that now it resembles an aqueduct once again. So the walking tour, I believe, starts at 10, and by 12 o'clock we will be convening at the new inn at Lackawaxen, which is just literally a stone's throw from the bridge. And there we'll have the presentations, the luncheon, and I believe they're recreating some canal era dishes for us as part of the luncheon. Sounds pretty interesting, so that should be fun. And yes, there's some musical entertainment, and it should be a great day. And as you said, tickets are available. They have to be purchased by April 19th. I will just say that it's one of the first of what will prove to be many events surrounding the D&H Canal coming up over the next year or so. We have groundbreaking for the canal, for the construction of the canal, happened in 1825. So we have the 200th anniversary of the groundbreaking coming up in next year in 2025. So you'll see quite a number of events. The county owns the D&H Canal Linear Park in the town of Mamikating. There'll be some events centered there. So quite a bit. And the Delaware Company will be completing the long-anticipated Kate project, hopefully in time for the groundbreaking ceremonies next year. That's an extension of the towpath trail from the Roebling Bridge to the Eagle Observation Hut on Route 97, and some seating and interpretive signs and so on along that route. Quite a number of events coming up surrounding the canal and its history in the next several months, so people should keep an eye out for those. We're very excited about it.
More information on that event is at the Delaware Company's website, DelawareCompany.org. Delaware Company is also active on Facebook. And of course, that's Sullivan County historian John Conway talking about this event that is coming up on April 27th, celebrating the anniversary of the Roebling Aqueduct. But of course, they said if you're interested in going, the ticket deadline is coming up this week on Friday, on April 19th. So thank you to John Conway for that, and thank you, Patricia Rubio, for doing that interview. And I want to say thank you, listener, for listening to the Local Edition. That's going to do it for the Local Edition. We're getting ready for the Daily coming up next. And one more time, we are trying to raise $1,000 during the news today. We started just before 4.